Hello, everyone. Welcome to C-Suite Talks. We speak with industry leaders, introducing you to some of the most interesting people and businesses today. We're focused on women, money, and power, as well as diversity in all areas. Welcome to C-Suite Talks. I'm Beth Hilbing, co-CEO of C-Suite with...
I'm Diane Gubin, co-CEO of C-Suite, and we are so happy today. We're speaking with Laura Gulhanek. Laura is the Senior Director of Programming at Him for Her, where she is responsible for the talent network and ecosystem engagement. Prior to Him for Her, she was at Google and AOL, building programs and community, as well as co-founding the Silent Book Club, a global movement expanding literacy in shared spaces with more than 900 chapters in 50 countries around the world. Wow. And she also sits on the board of CRNC and PR of Northern Colorado. So welcome, Laura. We're so happy to have you today.
Nice to see you.
Let's just jump in. Him for Her, which we love. Tell us what Him for Her is and what you do with them.
Yes, yeah. So Him for Her is a nonprofit focused on accelerating for-profit board diversity. Our primary lens is gender, but we serve anyone underrepresented in the boardroom. And the approach is really to bridge the network gap that exists between exceptional executive talent and sitting board directors and CEOs and investors. So we've been around since 2018. I joined in 2020, and it's been an amazing opportunity.
That's wonderful.
Well, you know what? We love that. So basically, you're putting people on for-profit board positions.
Right.
Love it.
And private too, right?
And private.
Well, yes, just like for-profit, private and public. We work with about 100 private equity venture capital funds directly. We support any CEO who comes to us and has an open board seat. We work with activists. We work with funds. We work with CEOs, you know, NomGov chairs. Anyone who's got a board seat that's going to pay the director money, we're here for it.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, we have lots of women for you.
We heard... Diane and I were on a call yesterday or the day before, and someone was saying that actually private boards are a really good facilitator for board positions over public quicker. Is that true or not true?
Well, I think it's true in a couple of different ways. First of all, there's thousands and thousands more private companies and private company board seats as compared to public companies. I think there's about 2,600 public companies, but I probably shouldn't spout numbers that I didn't bring confirmed. So there are, and you know, there are different sizes and scope. And so the requirements to sit on a private board is oftentimes just different than public. The due diligence process is different. The governance process is different. And, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, a public board is oftentimes building their pipeline of talent to really do succession planning for the different committees, for the different roles that are required by the SEC. For private companies, it's a bit more of a Wild West. So we have had people that take, you know, 3 years to join a board, and typically those are the larger companies, the public boards. And then for private, it can be 3 months. It can be, you know, 60, 90 days if you meet the people and they're on, and you're all copacetic, like they can vote you on, right? It doesn't take a shareholder vote to get you on the board. So it's quite a bit different, and there's a ton of opportunity.
And so what do you look for in a board candidate?
So it really there's going to be a lot of answers that it's like, it depends on the board. Like every board is a bit different. And what we've seen is particularly early stage companies. Tending towards, you know, venture capital backed really has a wide range. And usually they're looking at, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, what is it that their company needs to sort of see that growth, see the trajectory to get to the next step. So that might be go-to-market expertise. It might be, you know, a specific network of clients or customers they're looking to serve. It could be the voice of the customer. It could be they're looking for fundraising support or financial support on, you know, because that's the space they're in. As a company nears towards potentially like a public event, then they start to build out like the really, again, like firm profiles where they're looking for people who have had public executive experience on a public company or existing public board experience or exposure. That's where, again, the committee makeup can really more dictate the skill set. And so there's, of course, an audit committee, there is a governance committee, and having that deep experience on whether it's financials or truly governance is going to shape the profiles they're looking for. Typically, they are looking for sort of an ownership, a scope of ownership that is really focused on long-term growth and trajectory of the company. So P&L ownership, business line, country ownership, you know, if you've run a country for a business line.
Right.
What?
Or a women's networking organization.
Right? Exactly. I mean, you know, I think the voice of the customer role can really look a lot differently. If it's an HR tech company looking to sell to HR, then if you're an HR leader and you serve their market or you are the market, then I think that's where there's a lot of opportunity. And no matter what, it's a network. And so if you have relationships with existing investors, with CEOs, or if you don't yet get some, and they trust you and they trust your business acumen and your advice, that's going to go a long way beyond your title or purview.
Well, that's great.
So do you need a board resume and a board bio? Like, what does someone need to be under consideration or to be on your radar?
Yeah. Well, so broadly speaking, nobody needs a board bio. We don't require one. There's some organizations that ask for them. Certainly exec search will tend to either ask for, or frankly, a lot of them will craft one for you because they might have their own format. The interesting part is it's helpful to go through the process of crafting a board bio because it looks different than your operational resume. And so it will help you craft your narrative for the board and sort of what are those areas of expertise? What are those keywords and phrases that are reflected within just frankly the boardroom? And, you know, the advice we give is to find people who sit on boards who look like you and look what their bios look like because
right.
That's telling the story, right? And it's a great example too of like, look what boards they sit on because those are probably the types of companies, the scale, the industry, et cetera, that's going to be a great target as you're thinking about where you want to go.
Is board certification something that you look at?
You know, it's really not. Board certification is something that I think is super helpful for your own learning and development. Nobody is looking for that to get onto a board. And frankly, you know, a lot of the counterparts that we have that are of the male gender aren't necessarily rushing to get certified. And so it's helpful. And in particular, if you haven't sat on a board, if you haven't sat in your own company's board meetings as an operator, you know, for 5 or 10 years, there's a lot of governance, a lot of structural information that can be really, really helpful. But it's the benefit is for you. The other piece is usually it does offer real great networking and mentoring opportunities within whatever organization is providing it. So it's not something that we discourage, but it's not a requirement for, you know, accessing a board seat or getting onto a board.
That's good. Diane and I both have gotten board certified and it helped me really just get organized.
Yeah.
And to learn different pieces and parts that I knew but didn't solidly know. So I thought it was a very good worthwhile effort.
I think it helps with sort of like articulating again your value and navigating the network and the ecosystem. It's like a better understanding than trying to do it on your own.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a libretto. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So why do you feel that women are underrepresented on private and public boards? And we've kind of seen the numbers not grow, but kind of stay stagnant. Why is that, do you think?
Or go down, right?
Or go down, yeah.
Well, the good news is, so we actually just released our most recent benchmark study, and it's a report we put out every year, and we've now done it 5 years in a row. And we specifically focus on venture-backed companies that have raised $100 million or more in funding. So they're later-stage companies. They've had an opportunity or more to add independent as they're fundraising. What we've observed, it's again, there's good news, but again, there's a lot of work to be done, and particularly in contrast to public boards. So the proportion of those companies that have zero women on their board has about halved, right? But when we started, it was 60% of those companies had zero women on their boards, right? And these are later stage companies. Now it's about 32%. So the number is trending in the right direction. Still a bit of ways to go. But what we've observed is, and the reason that we focus on network expansion and development is it's really about who you know. And private companies are far less, you know, there's less disclosure, or there's less information out there. So if you don't know someone in the boardroom, it's virtually impossible to get referred for a board seat because usually they're also not utilizing exec search as much as public companies. And so there isn't necessarily that external sort of resource or network extension, frankly. And that's where we try to fill that gap. The other thing that we've observed is a lot of these seats sit empty. So there's no requirement to fill an independent board seat on a private company. Again, on public companies, they're required to have independence. It's part of the governance. And so it's a little bit of just, it's never an urgent thing for a CEO, particularly of a growth stage company. They're trying to get customers, they're trying to get funding, they're trying to hire their CFO, they're trying to do all these other things. And so it takes real diversion of energy. But ultimately, that board director can then also, you know, be a force multiplier in whether it's customer acquisition, whether it's M&A, whether it's that the growth that they're searching for, the independent can oftentimes really support. And there's also research that proves that out, right? If there's women on private company boards, the M&A price goes up.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
We love that. So, you know, everybody wants the paid board positions.
Yeah.
And if you could just, you know, generalize, how do these board positions pay as opposed to the publicly traded board positions? Like, is there almost like a generalization of how much someone should look for? What does that look like?
I mean, the generalization is every board is its own board, but
of course,
the real generalization is, you know, the earlier stage is likely going to be equity only, so stock in the company basically. You're not going to get cash income on an annual basis when it's quite small. We have seen companies as early as Series B, you know, providing even if it's a per meeting stipend, and so maybe you get $10,000 or $20,000 a year for the four meetings that you're kind of responsible for attending, whether virtually or in person. Later stage and sort of as the company grows, typically you're still going to get equity, but then the cash component does increase, and then on the private equity side. And so one of the benchmarks that we've seen, and Fred Wilson, who's a pretty sort of legendary venture capital investor in New York, he stated that the stock equivalency should be about $100,000 a year. Now that has to, the company needs to see success
it
for
has
you
to be making that.
Right. And so as someone who came up in tech, I've seen that go all sorts of ways.
Yes, exactly. And then you can't really exit it until it's in public anyways.
Right. Or you might be able to, you know, depending on various structures, and then we know on the private equity side, it's more likely going to be more of a cash component. And I know of one firm that, again, it's the equivalent of about $100,000 a year, but actually cash if you're sitting on one of their boards as an independent. And those are, you know, later stage companies, or, you know, they're kind of like really reaching for that growth or a public exit. So it's a range, but there's absolutely wealth creation to be had. The other thing that I'll just flag, and we posted about this recently, is the seven most valuable companies in the country all started as venture-backed companies, right? And so we have seen women join boards in our network who then did IPO. And that's more than $100,000, right? And so there's a real gap in this sort of wealth creation when you extrapolate these proportions and numbers of representation that is missing from women, women of color, men of color, et cetera.
Okay, that's very interesting. What kind of path do you think women should be focusing on as they want to get a board seat? And then once they get into a board seat, what should they be mindful of?
A double question.
I would say those are like two quite different questions. So the first one, I actually kind of go back. I think there's a lot to be said for, again, truly like start looking at company boards. And you can look at public companies because that's the board makeup that's available publicly. So start looking at the brands you like, or start looking at the brands you use, whether at work, and look at the profiles of who sits on the board and look at their backgrounds. And that doesn't mean you have to fit that specific box, but it does give a sense of like, okay, again, here I'm a CMO or go-to-market expert or revenue expert. And if I look at the people I look up to who sit on boards, like, here's what their backgrounds look like. Here's what they've, you know, the paths that they've taken or where they're involved. And I advocate, you know, if you know them, reach out to them, learn their path. If you're maybe a little bit earlier career, like look at their journey. And that's probably going to be the quickest, or not the quickest, but like you're going to be able to get the most kind of visibility if you sort of map to existing directors. There's, of course, very unique people who sit on boards, or sort of like non-traditional, one could say. And, you know, whether it's the dean of Wharton who sits on a few boards, who, you know, has that executive education background. So I think the good news is you can sort of look to some outliers as well. But the other piece of advice for that is just, you want to be an expert in your, whether it's your function or your field, but cross-functional, you know, cross-organization work you know, getting, if you can get to the C-suite, getting an additional title in the C-suite always helps, because that shows that you have that versatility and that, again, your scope is really beyond the sort of operations of a single business line or function. Okay, so that's getting. Once you're on a board, so you got brought onto that board because you have a set of superpowers, right? And whether, again, it's functional expertise, voice of the customer, you know, extraordinary network capabilities. I think once you get on the board, it's really bringing all of that to bear and continuing to learn. And so similar to kind of getting additional exposure experience across an organization, I would say the same thing on the board side. One thing that I've heard about sort of great board directors is they're not content to be known as like the singular expert in whatever, in operations or in governance, or they continue to expand and to learn. And I think that also gives an opportunity of certainly your next board seat, leadership opportunities on that board or elsewhere. There's another really interesting study where one of the biggest predictors of women getting CEO titles is by being on a board.
Wow. That's kind of the reverse of what I would have thought, but okay, go on.
Yeah. I think it's both, right? But like, so if you think about if you're sitting on the board and let's say you come in as the HR expert, but then you start getting audit experience because you're joining that committee, then you think about, then it starts to make sense. Like, absolutely, that can then translate to a CEO type of role because you're getting that type of scope and oversight exposure. So that's what I would certainly advise. And the other piece is just, you know, develop that board relationship and network across the board, across the executives that are in the room, because there's a lot of unlock there. And then bringing people along, right? Like, one woman on a board isn't enough, right? Like Ruth Bader says, let's get 9.
Right. You need to have a friend.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. But why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey and what brought you to Him to Her, and just a background. How did you get to where you are?
Yeah. So my background, as I think you alluded to, is basically in technology companies, and specifically in program management, community management, you know, user engagement. And I also have, you know, a decade plus experience, I would say, in DE&I, right? And that includes just ensuring that as we're presenting our customer stories, like we're utilizing, showing, like representing the full customer range, but also specific programs to elevate like underrepresented people. So all that to be said, Him for Her was founded by 3 women, Fiona Tang, Jocelyn Mangan, and Anne Shepherd. Fiona Tang and I had previously worked together, and I knew Jocelyn as well. So as they started the organization in 2018 and 2020, they were looking to bring on someone who basically could kind of come in and start running pretty quickly. And Fiona knew that she could bring me on and ramp me up pretty quickly. And so it worked out really well. And it really just really combines my love of connecting people in community, as well as sort of equity access, you know, again, kind of like ensuring there's opportunity for people who might otherwise not have had it.
Yeah, you're very good with that. And you've been very good with the C-suite community to dedicate your time to us and so forth. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, we really appreciate you. Thank you, Laura.
Yeah, and your guidance as well.
It's a great group.
So when you were at Google and AOL, what was your role there? And how did you like that environment? And what did you take away as some key lessons for an executive?
Yeah. So it's funny because at AOL, I worked for a company called About.me, and About.me was purchased by AOL, but we ultimately ran kind of as a startup within AOL, and there was about 20 people on the team all in. The nice thing is we were able to tap into the sort of parent company resources when it comes to marketing budget, for example, but we were still kind of our own, sort of our own group running forward. And then in the interim between sort of AOL and Google, I also worked at a handful of startups. Fiona and I actually had a consultancy where we supported startups. So then Google was really the first large company where I had to do like real stakeholder management, real cross-functional, like who is it that I need to get sign off from? I think the benefit has been is I'm pretty scrappy and able to kind of like do a lot with a little. And the experience at Google really gave me the exposure to that type of structure. And particularly with the work today, as I'm speaking to talent all day, every day, like I have a good sense of where they're coming from, what they're talking about, because I've had that early stage startup experience. I've had the larger company experience. And so I can help sort of gauge where they're at. And I think for sort of broadly across my experience, it's really just been in innovation and in sort of new ideas and trying things out and bringing new things to market, which Him for Her certainly is as well.
Terrific.
So tell us what you're doing this year. What are you kind of focusing on, or what's Him for Her focusing on this year for 2024 as we kind of wrap this up?
Yeah. So we always want to connect with private equity, venture capital funds, with board seats. You know, there's 11 of us in the organization and we're working hard, but if we have a community or a network of 7,000 or 15,000 working towards this mission, we can get there a lot faster. The other thing, and I think this is possibly helpful for folks to know, is board activity really mirrors market activity. So, you know, a year and a half ago, IPOs sort of fell off the radar quite a bit. And as you can imagine, the pre-IPO companies, again, there was less urgency to them developing their board. And I think we're not out of that yet, right? Like IPOs are starting to come back, but like, so it's less about looking for open board seats, which is never really the focus anyway. It's really about how can you get more visibility again within that ecosystem and how can you make connections? And that's what we're doing as well. It's like, we know not every company has an open board seat today, but like, how can we ensure that they trust us to introduce them to the right people when they start that process of succession planning or board planning.
Thank you. And do you give the PVC firms like open access to your database, or do you do the searches for them?
We make it as easy as possible for them. So we ask for a profile. If they don't have a profile in mind, we have a template that we work through with them. And then we walk them through like a few profiles that we pull up and say, okay, like, what do you think of this? Here's why we pulled them. And as much, we also try to ensure that, okay, here's like three within the bullseye of what you're looking for. Here's another couple others that we think you should take a look at to try and make sure that they are thinking kind of beyond what they may think they need. And as they continue conversations, we continue to connect them if things shift. So we really try to be a partner. And ultimately, too, I think it's helpful to know, I mentioned we're supported by these orgs. So we don't charge women. We're not looking. We welcome donations from everyone. But the firms and the companies and some of the ecosystem partners are really the ones who fund our work, in addition to some individuals who really believe in the mission and believe what we're doing is important. And we try to make it where it just makes a lot of sense, because we're offering value to these firms and to these organizations, and then they're welcome to make a tax deductible contribution, you know, from any channel that they have or all of the channels. So that's I think it's helpful to know our model too.
So Laura Gluhanek from Him for Her, how does everybody find you?
Yes. So organizationally, we are himforher.org. himforher.org/connect to kind of connect with anyone on our team. I am Laura at himforher.org. I also wanted to share one other thing, that we do have a sister org called Illumin, which is illumin.co. And there we do have some board programming. And one in particular is, after you join your first board, there's a program there to really accelerate your influence. And again, it's cohort-based. So I think it's similar to what you all do, but it's, once you've joined a board, how do you navigate that network, and how do you bring your full self to the board and do so in a way that's going to be, you know, additive.
I love that. Everybody wants to do the board training, but you're right. Once you're on the board, then what, right?
Then what? Exactly. That's why we started it, because women were joining boards and they said, can you help us now? And we said, and by the way, too, that programming is, again, open to anyone underrepresented in the boardroom. So not limited to women, you know, and it's been really helpful, I think, to like the participants who have kind of like a crew they can go to for questions and help.
I think that's fabulous, because that's one thing that we hear from our CEO women, is that they really have to be careful who they trust and who they speak with and so forth. And mm-hmm. That's what C-Suite's about, is giving you that safe place. But yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right.
So that's good thing with the company. We want to thank our sponsors, City National Bank, Uncle Nearest, a female-owned spirits company, Nutanix, a cloud service provider, Paul Hastings, law firm, Interpublic Group, advertising media and PR companies, and Amplify Professional Services, of course, executive search and IT consulting. Thank you for listening. And Diane, why don't you wrap us up?
Oh my gosh, thank you for listening. Hit the subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, anywhere you find your podcast. Please leave us a review, positive one. Follow us on social media. We're all over LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. And we love hearing from you. Please send Beth an email. Beth@csweet.org. And of course, check out our website, www.csweet.org. Thank you again.
And thank you again, Laura, so much for having us.
Yeah, great to see you both. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.